The Leslie Marshall Show, a true democracy in talk radio. Of, for, and by you, the people.
Coming to you live from Washington, D.C. on all things politics, the state of our democracy, and lifting up amazing women and people of color who are doing the work. My name is Anisha Singh. You can find me on Twitter at Anisha underscore S113. That's A-N-I-S-H-A underscore S113. So it is Women's History Month, y'all, and it's exciting. I'm so excited about today's show. We have three fabulous, amazing women I admire and have had the privilege of working with across issues to talk through the state of women today on the show. But before we jump in, I want to take a few minutes to recognize the pain and hurt felt today by the Muslim community in New Zealand, here in the United States, and around the world. I will say personally, I am heartbroken, a feeling that is all too familiar at this point. I think I'm still processing, and I know we all are, but here's what we do know. We know 49 people have been killed and 48 are being treated in hospitals after a terrorist attack on two mosques in central Christchurch, New Zealand. The terrorist is a self-professed, proud white supremacist who issued a manifesto citing U.S. right-wing extremism as an inspiration for his disgusting, heartbreaking terrorist attack. That's why we can't be silent here in the United States. What happens here sets a stage around the world. What we do, the rhetoric we share, the people we elect matter and sends a message. And so that's why it was so disappointing and so disturbing when, within a couple of hours of the attack, our own president here in the United States tweeted a link advertising a fake news outlet that promotes white supremacy and violence against Muslims. Let that sink in. This is not okay. So what can we do about it? Let's call it what it is. It's a terrorist attack. This man is a terrorist. Let us help fight back against harmful policies like the Muslim ban that further emboldens the racists. Speak up against constant profiling of Muslims as terrorists and the media's role in that. Calling out unchecked fake news outlets like the one the president advertised in his tweet. My sister in the movement, Deepa Iyer, said it the best today. We show solidarity. We pledge to fight Islamophobia and white supremacy. If you have an organization or a platform with a voice, issue a statement that shows support. Organize interfaith events and healing spaces. Support the mental and emotional needs of the Muslim communities. And get engaged and educated on the effects of hate and bigotry on all of us, communities of color, immigrant communities, the LGBTQ community, the Jewish community, women, the Maza community being the Muslim, Arab, South Asian, Sikh communities. We are numb to this because we carry the fear with us every day just by existing. We saw it in Pittsburgh at a synagogue. We saw it at a church in Charleston, and we've seen it at a Sikh temple in Oak Creek, Wisconsin. We've seen these attacks before, and personally, as a Sikh woman, this has been really hard. My heart is physically hurt for our Muslim brothers and sisters, but we stand with them in solidarity always. We know what this feels like. We've been there, and we must center love. We must put in the work to better ourselves and the communities who need us, and then take care of ourselves and surround ourselves with our village of people who we can then lean on, which is why, once again, I'm so excited that we have this amazing group of women here with us today. So let's just kick off the show. I want to introduce our lovely, lovely guests. On the phone, we have Mayor Marietta Garrett, who is the mayor of Wilkinsburg, Pennsylvania. She can be found on Twitter at Marietta Garrett. In the studio, we have Allison Zellman. She is the director of states and the interim political and organizing director at the Democratic National Committee. She can be found at Allison Zellman. Easy. I love these easy Twitter handles. And in studio, we also have Shilpa Patki, the vice president of the Women's Initiative at the Center for American Progress. And she can also be found at Shilpa Patki. I love how you guys just have. I do not have that blessing. There are a lot of initiatives out there for whatever reason. Welcome, ladies. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So one good thing that came out of this administration and all of the vile things that the president has said that has bashed women, people of color, and all of the communities that had any sort of diversity in this country is that the fire that it lit for women across the country to get engaged, take action, resist, march, and vote. 2018's election showed us just how powerful women can be if we come together, united against some of that bigotry, some of that sexism. And so we saw the youngest, most diverse female Congress we have ever seen. We have seen women, again, the Women's March, which was a historic march that occurred here. 2018 was named the Year of the Woman once again, similar to 1992, where that was also the Year of the Women, and we saw a similar wave of women activism. And so it's so exciting that we are able to, this Women's History Month, really reflect on a lot of those accomplishments, a lot of those landmarks and the history that has been made, but also talk about the challenges that are continuing to be faced. So I want to kick it off to Mayor Garrett. You are the mayor of Wilkinsburg, Pennsylvania, but a little unknown fact is that you are also the first Black woman to be elected to that position. So I really would love for you to talk a little bit about what that experience was. How was it running for office as the first Black woman, running against several white men, and what were those challenges like, and what can people learn from that?
Yeah, actually, so it was really interesting because Wilkinsburg is a predominantly Black community, and I had served on council for 4 years before running for mayor, so it didn't hit me until someone had said that we've never had a Black female mayor in Wilkinsburg. My mind was just kind of blown. I just assumed, there was in the past because for past 20 years we had Black men as mayor. So first, as I was campaigning and realizing that, that was definitely mind-boggling. Additionally, so just a quick point of clarification, I actually ran against three other Black men. But what was really interesting in that was the first time in campaigning or having opponents where there was so much overt sexism. Like the fact that, these men could just run and had nothing to show, hadn't really done too much for our community compared to, what I had been doing, the work that I've been, out there, community outreach, all of these things, bringing our residents together, but just off the sole fact that, they're men and that's entitled for them to continue the legacy of having a male be in that mayor role.
Absolutely. And Allison, I want to bring you in really quickly because you can attest to some of this. You've worked with candidates. You've seen the change in the Democratic makeup of candidates, of elected officials, of the rhetoric even during campaign seasons. What are some of those numbers? What is that climate looking like?
Yes, we like to say that 2018 was the year of the woman.
Yes.
Which in many ways it was. And I think what's really inspiring is it's across a lot of different areas. So women voters, women candidates, and elected officials, which is really exciting to see. So just amongst women voters, Democrats actually scored the highest margin of victory ever among women voters in a midterm election. And that was with 59% of women across the country voting for Democrats in the House. So women were clearly excited. They came out and voted in a midterm election, which, as we know, is unique. We usually see a really big drop off in midterms. Second, I know everyone knows this, but the amount of women running for office was incredibly inspiring. Mm-hmm. Over 400 women alone ran just for U.S. Congress, which is an all-time high. And I think one thing that's, just really exciting is every woman, whether you're running for U.S. Congress or school board, shows a little girl that they can actually be an elected official. And then finally, there were actually a record number of women who actually won for office and won. Women candidates alone flipped 24 congressional seats from red to blue, and there are now a record number of women in the House, more than 100 for the first time in our nation's history.
Absolutely.
So it's an incredible time to be a woman.
Absolutely. It really is. And I'm gonna cite one more number. So we had come out with a report talking about young elected officials in the state legislators. Merida Garrett, You were there with me on the panel when we launched this report. Women make up 49% of our young population, yet only 20% of young state legislators are women. This is a number from 2016. And so when we come back from the break, I want to talk a little bit more about those challenges, right, and the gap that we still have to fill to make sure that women are properly represented in our government. Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. My name is Anisha Singh. You can find me on Twitter at Anisha_S113. We are here today with three amazing women, Allison Zellman from the DNC, Shilpa Padke from Center for American Progress Women's Initiative Team, and Marita Garrett. I just realized your name is a little bit of a tongue twister when you had the mayor in there, but I like it. So we're talking a little bit about Women's History Month, the strides that women have made, the fact that 2018 was the year of the women, and how amazing it was to see that women turned out to vote. Something that was brought up during the break, which I totally slipped my mind, it's RBG's birthday as well. So happy birthday to our queen on the Supreme Court. And that, you know, that just highlights to for all of us how empowering it is when we have women in positions of power. And so, Shilpa, I kind of want to turn it over to you. We know that this Congress right now, it is the most female, and that translates into policy. So can you talk a little bit about this Congress, what they're trying to do to advance women?
Sure. I think what's really interesting to remember is not only do we have this incredible number of women in leadership positions, the diversity of the women and what they represent. So we have, you know, of course, Native American women, you know, women who are single moms, women with young children, survivors, and it really just shows the diversity of the party and I think a real focus on getting things done. And we are led, of course, by our fearless speaker, Pelosi, who,
absolutely,
you know, is a history maker in her own right. And I think when you contrast her focus and set of issues that she's trying to do, you know, move forward with the administration, it's a pretty stark contrast. So, you know, while you may have some brief shiny moments every now and then from the Trump administration, which tend to be quite superficial and shallow in the White House. On the other hand, we have the House of Representatives moving quickly on some significant legislation for women and families, you know, starting with H.R. 1 and passing a bill to get rid of corruption and really help level the playing field for women, to enable more women to run and win. And I think that's a really important game changer for everyone, but for women in particular, and really sets the stage to say that, you know, trying to move women forward means that we have to really look at the structures that have been holding women back.
Right.
And so I think that has been incredibly important. But we're moving on a set of issues. Paycheck fairness will probably be on the floor in the next few weeks. Issues like paid family leave, child care, violence against women, VAWA 19 will be on the floor soon. And so we're really seeing our issues front and center, showing what it means, the difference it makes when women lead, and the progress that we're going to make.
Absolutely. And just to list a stat here, there were 164 million women in the nation as of July 2016. By comparison, the number of men, 159 million. So we know women are the majority, and yet we're constantly in this uphill battle to get represented in our government, whatever level you're looking at. So Allison, can you talk a little bit about what we're seeing now with this presidential, you know, cycle? We have a record number of women running. I know personally for me, it was a huge moment when Kamala Harris announced, just because first woman, South Asian, you know, talk about representation. And for a second, I was like, this is amazing. You know, my future children will see that and say it's normal for a woman to run for president.
Yeah. Well, I have to jump in and tell a story here.
Yes. Because, okay, so background, Shilpa is also a South Asian woman.
Yeah, so I should say that. And I have a nearly five-year-old daughter who was very into the 2016 presidential cycle and was really excited to come with me to vote and has been very focused on the fact that we had a woman in Hillary Clinton, you know, that ran for president. And so the other day at bedtime, I said to her, Maya, did you know that there are many women running for president? And she looked at me and she said, okay. And I said, and did you know that one of them is half Indian like you? And she screamed.
Oh my God.
And then she said, tell me more. And I said, her name is Kamala Harris. And she said, her name kind of sounds like mine. It kind of sounds like Maya. And I said, wait for it. her sister's name is Maya.
Oh.
And then she just started screaming. And it was really, really sweet. And then she said, that means I can run for president.
Oh, my God. See, right there.
Yeah. All right, so the show's over. We're done.
It was just really, it's a great reminder of the difference it makes to have women running and visibly running for president.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I continue to just be really inspired thinking about all the little girls that are looking at this incredible slate of presidential candidates, thinking that they could be one of them. But it's normal, that it's totally normal to have a number of women running who are going to be competing with everyone. I think it is, it's really inspiring and thrilling to have such a diverse set of candidates for this presidential cycle.
Absolutely. And it matters for, again, like you said, Shilpa, the policies that we end up seeing coming out of these bodies of, you know, our government. Mayor Garrett, you can speak to that personally yourself. Again, first Black woman to be in your position. What were some of the things that you saw immediately that you were able to implement and introduce, and the representation you were able to bring just by being who you are?
Absolutely. So I think one of the great things in my campaign during 2017 was I saw so many other women running for office, too, in regards to mayor. You know, a lot of times when we think in local government of women in office seats, we tend to, you know, think of them more as like, oh, the school board candidates, or those roles are important, too, but that's not the only role that obviously women should fill at the local level. So when I was running in 2017, there were about four other women who actually got elected within Allegheny County, and it was just so great to see that and so nice to know that, okay, now that I am mayor, now that I've won, I'm not the only one who's going through, you know, some of the things that are pertinent based upon our gender. And just a few stats for Pennsylvania, because I have to always plug Emerge Pennsylvania,
of course.
but we're also ranked 49th in the nation of representation in women of government. So, you know, Pennsylvania, we've never had a female senator. We've never had a woman governor. We've never had a woman Democratic congresswoman, let alone Black in a lot of these roles in anything on the western side of the state. And so we still have so many more inroads to go, but kind of scratching off the surface, like, okay, now we're on council, now we're on mayor, where you're county controllers, all of these things, where, you know, I relate, it is an exciting time where when I do have children, that what they're seeing will be the norm. You know, we're seeing
Absolutely.
Where the norm is changing, but I very much want this to be a norm where we're not even making a big deal when a woman of color, you know, a young person, whatever, runs for office. That's just the way of the world.
Absolutely. That's so right. And we're so grateful for your service and for being that representation that we need. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about Women's History Month. Hello, and we're back. The Leslie Marshall Show. My name is Anisha Singh. I am your guest host today, and I am joined by three wonderful, wonderful guests that we have, three amazing, powerful women. Allison Zellman from the Democratic National Committee, Shilpa Podgy from Center for American Progress, and Mayor Merida Garrett from Wilkinsburg, Pennsylvania. Thank you, ladies, again for being here. We're talking about Women's History Month, and we were just talking before the break about representation, how important it is, and how that can translate to the policies that we want to see in this country. But I think, Shilpa, I'm going to kick it off to you. It's also important to lift up and talk about the unfair way that women candidates can sometimes be treated, especially what we're seeing right now with the presidential cycle. We have these amazing women who are running for office, for running for president for the first time ever, and yet we're seeing this likability question that always comes up. It came up in the 2016 race, and it's coming up again. Can you talk a little bit about what that has been like? I mean, as someone who has been running a lot of the work around women's rights and initiative and representation, you know, what does that translate to?
Yeah, thank you. It's a great question. I mean, I think what's really interesting is distinguishing from women who are running for president and executive office like governor and mayor is different from sort of the expectations of women running for Congress. And it's higher. There's, you know, everything in politics is gendered. The White House is a gendered institution. Congress is a gendered institution. And so we bring a certain set of expectations. you know, to those positions. And I think when it's time to have the next commander in chief, right, that's the term we use, all of a sudden gendered notions come into play, the likability question. And I said, I think to someone the other day, it's basically like women running for president. They're running for president while they're also running to be Miss America. They have to, you know, walk back. People have said, you know, like the walk backward in heels thing. But they have a double standard. They have to be warm, but not, you know, but not too silly. They have to be a fighter, but they can't be too angry. and almost everything, they're really walking this very delicate tightrope and sort of trying to manage expectations. And that's really challenging. And I think there's more to be learned. And it is very normalizing to have so many women running. It can take that off the table a little bit more. But there are still certain expectations we have of what it means to be and hold executive office. And those expectations are real. And so, you know, it's up to us and the media to really like call that out when we see it, when we hear misogyny on campaigns. You know, it's up to us to sort of push back against it.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, so one number I have here is 86 women hold statewide elective executive offices across the country. Of the 86 women, 14 or 16% are women of color. That's not much. Mm-hmm. And how are we going to really change that narrative and really get people to normalize women running and take away these stigmas about likability and she smiles too much or she's too angry and all of these crazy things if we don't have more of that representation? Mayor Garrett, I want to turn it to you on your thoughts on that because you can personally speak to it.
Absolutely. I can also personally speak to when you were saying, like, you have to be warm, but not too kind. But you have to be firm. That is a daily struggle, all of those things. So speaking to, you know, why to get, because that's part of it. I think one of the things, as we're seeing more women running for office, more women running for executive office, we see the whole, you know, conundrum in these terms that come up when women run. And we have to also be mindful, this can also turn more women away from running for office. I know a lot of people who, you know, they got fired up by 2016, but also felt like, wow, the treatment that Hillary received, you know, just off of being a woman, I don't know if that's something I'm willing to put myself into, which is very fair and valid. We have to acknowledge that, you know, we have to do a better job of, you know, how we are framing when women run. So to that point, you know, one of the main things of how to change that is then also getting more women to run, specifically women of color, especially with Black women. For so long, we are always the electorate that people reach out to us to make sure, you know, hey, we know you're going to talk to the men, the sons, the church, all of these people in your community to get out the vote. So we really depend on you. Mm-hmm. But then it kind of changes when, oh, we're actually thinking about running. Oh, no, it was good when you were helping to spread the word about the vote.
Right.
So just as, you know, as 2016, it was Trust Black Women. I believe now what we're really seeing and having people put their money where their mouth is in electing Black women.
Absolutely. I think that, I mean, that's exactly right, right? You know, we can talk the talk all we want, but we have to walk the walk. We have to support women. We have to support Black women. We have to trust Black women. And so thank you for bringing that up. Allison, I want to turn it to you because you're seeing a lot of these women running and you're seeing them express interest. And what exactly, you know, does that look like? How are people able to get involved in this?
Yeah. So one of the ways that I think we begin to normalize that all women should run for office is we need a really good pipeline, which is something that we're very focused on at the committee. And so one of the programs we actually recently launched is called Organizing Core 2020, with the idea that young people at the youngest age, like they're coming out of school for the first time, they need to be told that they can do this work. They can be an organizer. They can run for office. They can enter this world and really be trained to do it well. Which is something that particularly communities of color and particularly women, we have really not done a lot of in politics and in Democratic politics. So we are very focused on this program for this cycle, making sure we are going to schools right now and trying to recruit young people and tell them you can run for office, you can work on campaigns, you can get involved in politics to really create a pipeline. So coming out of 2020, when all these people hopefully work on campaigns, they say, I want to be that candidate. I want to work there. I want to do that work. And I think that is actually, I think, one of the real places where it starts, is getting young people to believe they can do this and how they can get involved.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was just going to add, I mean, I think the other piece to all of this is that we constantly look to women and women of color, I think, just as the mayor said, to turn out, to show up. Mm-hmm. And we don't look to them to necessarily lead in those ways. But we also tend to ignore the policy realities that they face. And I think for us to be truly successful over the next year and a half, we have to focus on the issues that matter to women of color. It's not just enough to talk about the wage gap, but let's talk about the concrete policies that we need that will actually help Black women make more money at the end of the day, that will raise wages and sort of support caregiving and everything else. And so I think one of the things that we're really focused on is being super concrete about delivering an agenda that will make a difference. That's what I think the House of Representatives is trying to do right now, is trying to show, you know, what does it mean to lead on these issues? But, you know, maternal health is a great issue that's, you know, significantly important to women of color, and especially Black women, with the stark racial disparities of Black women dying, you know, 3 to 4 times more than white women. But we need to put those policy solutions on the table and really start that conversation, I think. And folks like Stacey Abrams and Kamala Harris have been doing that. But I think that's what we need to see more of, too.
That's exactly right. I mean, according to the National Women's Law Center, white women on average make 79 cents for every dollar made by a man, while Black women make 63 cents, Native American women 57 cents, Latina women 54 cents, Asian American women 87 cents. So there's a significant variation. Thank you. Yes, exactly. You know, when you have that kind of disparity, how are women supposed to feel like they have the space and the privilege and the income to even take that leap and run for office, but then also paid leave, you know, maternity leave, paternity leave, you know, where so many companies don't even offer paternity leave. So then how is a woman supposed to go back to work if the husband is not able to take off work to take care of the child? So there's just so many different policies. So that's exactly right. And Allison, you know, another thing that we need to be talking about is, how are women actually getting involved in this campaign? Well, not just in the campaign, but in organizing generally, right? Women tend to get more involved. And so when we have that trend towards more activism by women, why aren't we setting up resources for women to be able to do that, right? Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about those numbers?
Yeah, sure. So one of my favorite stats from the cycle is we used an organization called Mobilize America to really recruit a lot of our shifts and track and make it really easy for people to work on events. And we saw over 50% of shifts completed were from women. And that's something, you know, I think we've known for a while that activists, they sometimes tend to be women. You see women coming out, they're volunteering, they're doing that kind of work. You know, I think the real question is, like, how do you really translate that? Like, I'm a woman, I'm willing to volunteer, I'm willing to help, to I want to be the person running for office. I want to actually be the candidate. And that, I think, is really the transition we're starting to see a lot more of. And that's what we really need to inspire volunteers and people to do. And I think that starts with exactly what's happening now. The more women that step up from every level on the ticket, from school board to Senate, inspires the next woman to do the same. And I think that's what we want to keep seeing.
That's exactly right. I think we are programmed as women to be the caretakers, to be the ones that sit back and support. We are passionate, we are fierce, but how are we translating that to actual power that then we can make change that we need to see? And I think, again, what we were saying at the top of this hour is, this president has definitely done one thing right, and that is really galvanize women to recognize that, listen, if this man who is so unqualified and so vile can be president, man, we can do it too. And so it's time. And that's why I think we're seeing this large slew of candidates from the Democratic side. How many candidates now? I've lost track.
A dozen?
There's a lot.
And every day we're hearing of another. And the fact that women are a part of that and really stepping up is so huge. Mayor Garrett, talking a little bit about what Shilpa was saying, when we talk about the policies, when you're looking at it from a local level, what do you think state governments particularly could be doing to make it easier for women at the workplace, at home, you know, things we were just talking about, wage gap, paternity leave, and other policies that can, again, just help women really stand on their own two feet and have a level playing field when it comes to the work that they're doing.
Absolutely. I believe all of those things. And one of the things that, you know, I'm trying to work on within our region is because a lot of times we hear things like, oh, innovation and tech jobs and, you know, this is true sustainable paychecks and a career option. But who are those jobs really targeted towards? So I'm working on ways of how we can, you know, obviously we need to have policies that enforce having gender equity in the pay and also maternal leave and paternal leave as well. But let's take it even further by trying to create somewhat of a more equitable playing field by making sure that those most vulnerable, such as women of color, black women, etc., can have another pipeline in these jobs in the tech sector where we know that they're going to be getting paid more than double a living wage.
Absolutely. And Shilpa, turning it to you, on the federal level, what can we be doing to support policies and get involved?
Yeah, there's several bills that are moving right now. Paycheck Fairness is the top sort of equal pay bill that we're hoping to see at the, you know, on the floor of the House by the end of the month, the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women's Act, bills that support comprehensive caregiving. So, of course, maternity and paternity leave, you know, parental leave, but also being able to take time off to care for yourself or a sick loved one. The Healthy Families Act is moving, which is paid sick days. We're also seeing energy around childcare, minimum wage. All of those issues are moving in the House, which is really exciting and really critical to sort of women's progress. I think the hard part is when we see them just languish in the Senate. And I think that's when we're really going to need to turn it up. It's wonderful to see this progress. The House is moving. Committees are having hearings. All the things that we would
so
want.
So refreshing, yes.
But pretty soon, they're just going to land in the Senate with a thud. And I think it's going to be on all of us to sort of demand accountability, to demand that the bill, you know, that we keep moving, and then use that to do some accountability and leverage change. I said to someone the other day, let's not forget that Lindsey Graham, who has voted against the Violence Against Women's Act four times, voted against it, is now the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee that will be shepherding the bill through.
The bill through and all of these horrible extremist nominees for our judiciary. It's insane.
So I think it's time for us to turn it up, remind people what's in these bills, why it matters, why survivors' voices matter in a sort of post-Kavanaugh reality, and to just be able to turn it up and take that energy, demand more.
Absolutely. And then Allison, obviously it's a very busy time for the DNC, but what can folks do to get involved? I know you're talking about about the organizing program you guys have. Anything else that folks can be doing to really get involved in these campaigns and start taking those first few steps to get involved?
Yes, 100%. So one of my favorite things to just tell everyone if you want to do something is start talking to your neighbors. A lot of this work is all about people really trying to understand what they care about, what their representatives care about. Go to your local state party, see if there's openings to run for office. One of the things we hear all the time is no one knew there was a vacancy, and so a Republican took the seat. No one knew there was really an opportunity to run. There's lots of places to get your start if you want to run for office. Your state party should be able to help. Democrats.org also can help you figure that out. But take your first step, talk to your neighbors about what they care about, figure out if there's a vacancy near you that you could run for office. Go to organizingcore2020.com if you want to be an organizer. And then finally, I will say there are actually a lot of elections in 2019, not just in 2020.
Great point.
Yeah, make sure you vote. Nothing more important. When women vote, women win. So let's make sure everyone gets out there and actually votes for these values we really care about.
That is right. And so once again, I want to thank our lovely guest today for joining us on this show. We had Mayor Marietta Garrett from Wilkinsburg, Pennsylvania. You can find her at Marietta Garrett on Twitter. We had Allison Zellman, the Director of States and Interim Political and Organizing Director at the Democratic National Committee. You can find her at Allison Zellman. And finally, we had Shilpa Podkey from the Women's Initiative at the Center for American Progress. You can find her at Shilpa Patki on Twitter. Thank you, ladies, so much for being on this show. We were able to talk about Women's History Month, talk about how important representation really is for women to be in elected office. Shilpa, thank you for telling us about your daughter and the beautiful story about Maya, hearing about Kamala Harris running for president, really just highlighting just how important representation is and how little girls everywhere are really watching what is happening and getting inspired and thinking that they can do it too. And Mayor Garrett, thank you so much for really your leadership, for running for office yourself, for being that first for so many people, for in exchange of that, you know, really showing little black girls in Wilkinsburg, but across the country as well, that they too can be mayor and run for office and really create change. Thank you all so much for being on the show. And welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. My name is Anisha Singh. I am so excited that we had an amazing show talking about Women's History Month with great guests. Now we're going to hear about the news of the day from Luke Vargas, who is the chief foreign correspondent for Talk Media News. Luke, what's going on today?
Hey, good afternoon. I mean, among the many important headlines that I'm afraid the horrible incident in New Zealand has displaced today is a very
Absolutely.
Inspiring and necessary story concerning these youth climate protests that have really been organized all over the world. The reports are, as the day starts to wind down, that in at least 100 countries, young people mobilized, many of them self-organizing events to push for action on climate change. You thought 1,000 high school students skipping school in Minneapolis. I'm seeing reports from Brussels. 30,000 people were in the streets of the Belgian capital.
Wow.
20,000 in Berlin. The United States or United Nations Secretary General saying, look, these people are inspiring. They have a right, basically, to be angry with the lack of action by adults. And I have to say, I mean, I sometimes find attempts by my fellow folks in radio journalism to interview young people as sort of, you know, color commentary in news to be a little bit unnecessary. Today, I was so refreshed, actually, to hear young people describe climate change in terms that it means, in the way that it's meaningful to them. Yeah, it sounds a little silly to boil down climate change to polar bears and ice caps, but biological diversity and rising ocean levels are actually probably one of the more concise ways to talk
Absolutely.
About the extreme dangers of this. So I was really inspired by that. And the other thing, I guess we've got about 30 seconds left, but something to look forward to as we go into next week and the U.S.-China trade talks trying to wrap up, is it looks like China's given a concession, saying they're not going to force their companies to partner with American and other companies that want to do business there. This might be a way out of the trade war if the technology transfer that's decimated part of the American tech sector and a lot of other businesses, if that's going to get cleaned up, that might be an off-ramp from further tariffs, which I hope would be the case. So we'll see.
Thank you so much, Luke. We really appreciate you coming on for Talk Media News. And that's really our show today for the Leslie Marshall Show. Thank you all for tuning in. Once again, be kind to one another as you head into this weekend. Show some love to the Muslim community here in America and across the world. We must love each other more and show each other solidarity. Thank you and have a great weekend.